Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group, offers securities and investment advisory services through Waddell & Reed Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA and SIPC, and a federally registered investment advisor. FRS Financial Group is a separate entity from Waddell & Reed. Insurance products are offered through insurance companies with which Waddell & Reed has sales arrangements. The information presented on this show is solely for information purposes and is not to be construed as an offer to sell or the solicitation of an offer to buy any financial product or service mentioned. Waddell & Reed does not offer tax or legal advice. Please consult with a professional prior to making any financial decisions. Any opinions expressed are those of Rick Stevens and may not be the opinions of Waddell & Reed. The information is subject to change based on market and other conditions. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Well, thank you for joining us and welcome in to Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I am Rick Stevens. I am your host, and this is your show. If you have topics you would like to hear discussed, please let us know. You can reach me via phone at 719-500-8700. That'll ring to our office, and you can ask for Rick. You can also send me an email at rstevens@wradvisors.com, or you can also go to our website. That is frsfinancialgroup.com. Click on the contact tab at the top, scroll down, send us your question or message, because if you have any questions, we want you to reach out. We would love to hear from you. Now this week, joining me in studio is Evan Withrow from Steiners and Dejas Burrell and Wilhelmy. They're a full-service law firm here in Colorado Springs, and I have to add some disclosure here, and Evan, you may have some of your own, but Waddell & Reed is not affiliated with Evan Withrow or with Steiners and Dejas Burrell and Wilhelmy, and Waddell & Reed themselves do not endorse any product or services from third-party providers. Evan, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, Rick. How are you?
It's a beautiful, sunshiny day, and, you know, because it's Colorado, that could change in 10 minutes, so we'll see how it goes. I'm going to jump in right here directly into the legal world. Evan, we have used the services, us at FRS Financial, for a variety of different things. We've done it for our trademark, and I know that your firm handles just about anything when it comes to the legal realm. So when we hear that Steiners and Dejas is a full-service law firm, what does that really entail?
Yeah, so in terms of a full-service law firm, it means we can handle pretty much any legal matter that walks through the door. We have both a litigation side as well as a transactional side. So your litigation is what you prototypically think of when you think of an attorney. They're going to be in the courtroom. They're going to be fighting over things. And then you have the transactional or more relational side. So estate planning, entity formation, business planning, those types of things. I will say the one thing we don't handle is bankruptcy, which honestly no one really wants to handle. So we don't handle bankruptcy, but we do have good referrals for that. But otherwise, we're what you would call a full service law firm.
Awesome. You know, here on Money Matters, we talk about everything that your dollar touches, right? We talk about today's usage, and we do that by discussing our budgeting and our goals. We talk about the future when we're looking at that saving and that investing sort of side. And we talk about the idea of leaving that legacy behind when you've passed. And one of the things that many people think about in terms of legacy is having their correct beneficiaries on their account or having that will or that trust in place to ensure that our assets move to our families the way we want it to happen. Now, when it comes to that will or that trust, what are some of those important things that our listeners need to know about? Do they really need to have a will? Can they just get by with having beneficiaries named on a bank account or a retirement account? What do they need to know about this?
Great question, Rick. So when talking about wills and trusts, I call it estate planning. And so when an attorney says they do estate planning, it truly is looking at your estate. And I think we'll touch on what your estate is and what that all is comprised of a little bit later, but it's estate planning. So everyone is different. Every situation is unique. It really is just getting a plan in place. So it starts with having a conversation about what your assets are, what your estate is, and what you want to have happen. So whether you need a will, whether you can plan around that through beneficiary designations, it's all different for each particular individual, and that's something that needs to be talked through. with an attorney and then with your family members.
Awesome. You know, I read a survey on caring.com, and it was a survey that had been done of U.S. adults, and this was from 2020, survey of U.S. adults, and it showed only about one in three who are 21 and older actually have an estate plan in place. And for some, I'm pretty sure that it's they don't want to face the potential mortality that's in life. But for others, though, it could just be a simple case of not knowing where to start. So when it comes to putting together that estate plan, where do we need to start?
Well, I would like to say that it starts by having people talk with me. but it really does start with a conversation. And, you know, we're a very low-pressure firm in that I am more than willing to sit down and talk with you, talk about the options, and just go through everything on a fairly casual, informal basis because I work to be a resource for folks when it comes to estate planning and for other legal matters as far as that goes. But it really starts with a conversation. And you're absolutely right, Rick, that it is a lot of the times when I talk with people, they don't want to address these types of issues because they can be difficult conversations. You're talking about what happens to your property ultimately when you pass away. But honestly, it's not quite as bad as a lot of people think. You know, I've heard that before from clients, and by no means is that meant to toot my own horn, but it really is not as difficult a conversation as you might think. And if they've been working with yourself, you know, Rick, and your firm to kind of build and grow and collect these assets, the next step truly is what happens to those assets when I pass, and to put in all of that hard work to then not have a clear plan in place as to what happens with what you've built and what you've put together for your family, then, you know, it can be more problematic. So the best I can say is it just starts with a conversation, and, you know, that's when you would reach out and talk with somebody like myself.
Awesome. Awesome. I appreciate the clarity on that. Thank you. And I know that our listeners are going to appreciate that as well. And you know, as we're talking about the estate here, and we've brought up that concept of assets, the big question is, well, what do we consider an asset, right? Is it just things like a retirement account or a bank account or a car or a house? Or are there other things that we need to think about as assets inside of our estate?
So in terms of an estate, a lot of the times when I say estate, people say, what are you talking about, right? Is it this sort of theoretical thing? Well, your estate is just truly all of the things you own. So when I say your estate or your estate assets, it's everything you own, from your big ticket items like a house, like land, like your car, all the way down to personal property, like your cell phone, your jewelry, those types of things.
So my baseball card collection would fall under that then?
That's correct. Yes, your baseball card collection is an asset of your estate. Absolutely. So it kind of comes down to how those assets are transferred, and that is a little bit different and something that, you know, we'll look into a little further here, I think. But, you know, it comes down to beneficiary designations. Does it go via the will? And so that's a little bit more technical. But when you think about your estate, it just truly is, the simplest way to put it, everything you own.
Awesome. You know, I know that for my wife and I, we still need to sit down with you because we haven't taken that time yet to revamp our wills. For us, it's been about 10 years since we put everything together. In that time frame, we have added children to the family. We have one house now instead of two. My practice has grown. I've got business partners. My oldest will be 21 in just a few months, so he won't need the guardianship side of things anymore. And we've actually discussed asking if he would actually want to serve as the guardian for his siblings as well. One of the sets of folks that we had originally asked about being executors for the estate, well, they've moved out of state. They're in Iowa now. So there are a lot of changes that have happened in our lives that really precipitate this needing to sit down and really carve out the time on our side to be able to do that and to update some things with our plan. So for us, 10 years of children growing, life changes, we definitely have updates. For most folks, though, about how often or after what kind of major life events would you typically recommend sitting down for the review and that potential update on the estate documents?
Rick, I'm going to give you the classic lawyer answer here, which is that it depends. and you can put quotation marks around it depends, because it really does come down to the particular situation, the particular individual or individuals or their family. So some of the big ticket items, as you've touched on, having kids, or if those kids have grown up, because some people have certain provisions in their estate that are tied to age. And so, as you mentioned, you know, you've got one of your kids is grown up to the point where they're not in need of a guardian anymore. And just in case, you know, just in case our listeners, you know, need a reason to come in and talk with me, Rick obviously ran through a number of specifics there, and those are all the things that we talk about and that we address. So there's more going on sometimes in estate planning than a lot of people think. But having kids, death in the family, people move away, and sometimes just simply the passage of time. You know, sometimes laws change. And then there are times where if you attain new assets or sell larger assets, then that makes sense as an opportunity to review your will. One thing I will say is you don't have to update your will every time you buy a new car or buy a new house, because that depends a little bit on the specificity of how you distribute your gifts through your estate plan. But, you know, if there's something that you say have given, you know, your 1967 Shelby GT500 to a particular family member and you've since sold that, well, then what happens to that, right? If it's no longer in your estate and the will still talks about who that goes to. So it's those types of things, kind of those bigger life events that would precipitate the need for a review of your estate plan and your testamentary documents.
Awesome. Awesome. So it's not just me then that needs it reviewed. It could be a lot of different folks.
Correct. Correct. You've got a few things going on, Rick. You know, I've seen some with more and some with less, but yeah, it's pretty much anyone and everyone. If you have estate planning docs in place, I've seen people that have a need to update it within just a couple years because of some major life events. And then I've had others that have gone 20 years and there hasn't been a lot of change. But again, it's just specific. And as I said, the classic lawyer answer, it depends.
Well, I'm looking for the it depends again here. So I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. So my wife and I have what I believe they call a pour over will. Creates a trust when we pass. Then I've put a bunch of hoops in there that are created for the kids to access their part of the estate. We created those because we have a wide age range in our kids. They're, you know, about to be 21 all the way down to about to be 7. And because I'm a little bit crazy and I don't want to see anything that my wife and I have worked so hard to build to just be squandered. So aside from the crazy folks like me who want some kind of control of the assets after they pass, who else might need a trust compared to just a will?
Yeah, I mean, I could say it depends. Absolutely. You ask a lawyer a yes or no question or a question that has a yes or no answer, and they'll still say it depends. But in terms of trust versus will, a lot of the times it's preference, but there are situations in which a trust makes more sense than a will and vice versa. So one situation in which people tend to like to have a living trust in place is those who want to avoid the probate process. And we aren't going to get a lot into the probate process or estate administration. It's not quite as scary as a lot of folks think. Colorado is a little simpler than a lot of states in regards to the probate process, but that's probably reason number one that I see people putting living trusts in place instead of a will, is to avoid that probate process. A couple other quick reasons are if you have assets or property in other states and you want to bring everything into that umbrella, just so they're all owned by the trust and in one place, that would be another reason why.
Awesome. Well, we are up against our break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of those other documents, not just estate related, that you may need to have. So stick around, everybody. We will be right back. Hello, everyone. Rick Stevens here with FRS Financial Group. Did 2020 treat you like a rag doll in a washing machine? Were there unexpected financial issues that came up that you're still wrestling with? Maybe there was a wedding, a funeral, a birth, a graduation, or a job change in your world last year. Whatever the financial event, we believe it's always a good idea to speak with a financial professional, and the pros at FRS Financial Group are here to help. With FRS Financial Group, we're here to serve your best interest, and we want to see you succeed every step of the way in your financial journey. Whether you're nearing the end of the working years, just starting out, or anywhere in between, we can help. So give us a call at 719-500-8700 to set up a time. And remember to tell us that you heard on KRDO. Also, don't forget to tune in to Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., wherever you listen to KRDO. Investment services offered through Waddell & Reed, Inc., a separate entity. Waddell & Reed, Incorporated, member SIPC. All right, well, thanks for sticking with us through that break, ladies and gentlemen. Rick Stevens here with Money Matters, and we are talking in the studio with Evan Withrow from Steiners and Dayhoss. And Evan, as we have come back here from the break, I'm gonna turn this just a little bit. So we've talked about the will, the trust, some of the different pieces in those estate documents, but you guys put together things like powers of attorney and medical directive documents as well, right?
Yes, and perfect leading question there, Rick. So lawyers never like to ask questions they don't know the answer to. So when you finish with, you know, is that correct or right, it leads me right to where you want me to go. So yes, we put together powers of attorney and medical directives, which a lot of people and what we refer to as a living will. And in case our listeners aren't aware, a living will or a medical directive is basically your end of life wishes should you be in a situation where you're on life support, indicating and directing, you know, what you would want to have happen at that point. But, you know, that's typically powers of attorney and medical directives slash living wills are part of our overall estate plan when you come in and talk to us. So we'll put your will or your trust together along with those powers of attorney and those medical directives. But we can also do those as standalone documents as well.
Awesome. So here's a question I think, you know, a lot of listeners probably have, because it's one I used to have until I understood why. And that's the question of, why do we need those kind of documents in place? And is there more to it than just a simple power of attorney that may say, my brother Mike can make whatever decision he needs to for me?
So in terms of the reason why you want to have those documents, right? So if, you know, Rick's already mentioned that you have your estate documents and your testamentary documents, which control things upon your passing, whereas powers of attorney, medical directives are things that are happening during your lifetime. And in that regard, powers of attorney especially are sometimes as much, if not more important than having a will or a trust in place, because that document in particular, a power of attorney, whether we're talking about a medical power of attorney, which allows your agent who you designate inside the power of attorney document, whether it's a medical power of attorney making decisions with regards to your medical care, or it's a general power of attorney for your agent making decisions as to all of your other matters, whether they're financial or otherwise. They're remarkably important because typically those are what we call springing powers of attorney, which means they spring into action, so to speak, if and when you suffer an accident that may leave you incapacitated to the point that you can't handle your own affairs, or maybe, say, just old age, right? You get to a point where you're unable to manage your own money or competently make your own decisions. You want to make sure that previous to that time, you've designated an individual that you trust, that you know will be able to make those decisions on your behalf and make those smart decisions. And I think one of the other things to think about, too, is if you don't have those things in place, there are legal mechanisms to where someone can do that and take over those decisions later on, but it's going to involve the court process. So if you don't have a power of attorney in place and you become incapacitated, you know, likely would have to open a guardianship or conservatorship action, and a family member would have to hire an attorney like myself. I do handle those matters, and then petition the court to allow you to make those decisions, when it's a heck of a lot easier for you to just come in, you know, set those folks out and put them down on paper prior to that need ever coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the thing with these documents and even with, you know, the discussing the will, the overall estate plan, with my clients, I usually tell them that it's best to discuss that will when everyone can be present, including the ones who wrote it. I tell them that the only time there should be that gathering of family members in the attorney's office to find out what's in the will is really when it's on television or in the movies. So what do you generally recommend for clients as far as keeping everybody informed as to what's in that estate plan?
You're absolutely right, Rick. That makes for great TV and great movies and good entertainment, but it's not the most practical for real life in terms of reading that will in the attorney's office. We get that question occasionally of, you know, when's the reading of the will going to happen? And that's not really a legal event. It's not something that happens regularly. So in terms of speaking with your family members, Once you've come in, talked with us, we've put an estate plan in place, whether it's a will or trust. You've figured out where your property is going to go, you know, who's going to be the personal representative of your estate and administer your assets. And just as an FYI, most people know a personal representative as an executor, but Colorado uses the term personal representative. But once you have your personal representative, your trustees, your guardians, your fiduciaries in place, you've decided who's going to get what. That's the time where you take a copy of your will and you sit down with your family members that it affects and you talk with them. I handle probate and estate administration on the other side of things when people do pass away. And a lot of the times, family conflicts and issues and lawsuits come up when the family has not sat down and discussed the terms of the estate plan. And, you know, the unknown and the surprises when hearing about it for the first time is what tends to drive a lot of disputes. So my recommendation is, you know, we provide as many copies as you want of your estate plan. We can give those to you. You take those to your kids, to your family members, your siblings, your friends, whoever is involved in the process, and sit down and talk with them. And honestly, those can be difficult conversations as well, but it's going to save a heck of a lot of time, stress, and emotional issues later on down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's one of the things that I like to tell folks is, you know, if there's a surprise in there, you want to be able to answer the question why and not leave your kids to wonder about that.
Absolutely, Rick. I don't mean to cut you off, but especially when you have situations where there's unequal distributions in your will or there's been disinheritances. And again, those are decisions that people make, but they are absolutely something that you want to talk about with those folks, because again, it's just going to cause issues, you know, for your family down the road. And one thing I always tell my clients or prospective clients, and in this case, the listeners, is your estate plan is as much for you as it is for your family, mm-hmm. right? Because This is you putting things in place so that they can administer and handle it once you've passed away. And so it's really an opportunity for them to be able to kind of clearly carry out your wishes.
Yep, that actually leads right into where I'm going next, because in our documents, my wife and I, we get pretty specific about some things. My wife, part of her plan, she doesn't want a visitation. She doesn't want an open casket sort of service. She just wants to be cremated. I've actually told folks that, you know, we're going to cremate mom and put her in little hourglasses. So about 5 minutes before it's time to head out the door, you know, you flip it over and then mom will tell you when it's time to leave. part of my directives are that I want everybody in attendance at my memorial service to get a ticket to a baseball game. Because one, I love baseball, and two, I can just imagine the entire stadium's response when up on the big video board it says, "Welcome Rick Stevens Memorial," and they're going, there's a funeral happening today? So I can imagine that. So when my siblings and I talked with our parents about some of those directives, the only thing that my dad specified is that he wants his grandson Ruger, which is my brother's oldest, to have his Ruger. So as that dutiful oldest son, I immediately went home, had my kids' names changed to Browning, Sig Sauer, Smith & Wesson, and Glock. Kidding, of course, there. But when it comes to those specifics, Evan, how specific have you seen clients get with their wishes?
So you can be as specific or as general as you want. And this goes back a little bit to what we discussed earlier, is depending on how specific you are in your will or in your trust, it may require more amendments or modifications to those documents. So a more general will would simply split up your estate by percentages. So for example, I have 2.5-year-old twin girls. It's as simple as I'm splitting my estate equally, 50% to each of my kids, right? Super simple. If you have a lot of family or you have certain family heirlooms or big specific gifts you want to, you know, if you're lucky enough to be in a position where you have, say, multiple homes and you want to give one home to a particular child, that's something I'd recommend you set out in your will. Cars a lot of the time as well, I've already mentioned. You would probably want to put that in the will itself. Otherwise, there's a document that we provide that you can actually just use any piece of paper, but it's called a memorandum for disposition of personal property. And that's just a list that you make out with regards to some of your smaller items. So if you've got a family heirloom ring, you know, from a grandma, great grandma, and you want a particular kid to have that, you just put it on that piece of paper, say who it goes to, sign and date that piece of paper every time you make updates to it, and keep that with your will. That allows you to make certain gifts and dispositions of property without having to update your documents. But in terms of specificity versus general, general, it depends.
I love it. I love it. Perfect. Well, last question for you here. And one of those discussions that I get into from time to time when chatting with clients about their wills is I'll have a client tell me they don't need to update anything because they did their will 25 years ago when they lived in Texas or Virginia or somewhere that isn't Colorado. And typically I recommend them getting it looked at because A, it's been 25 years, but the big question is, do they need to update it if it was done in a different state?
The automatic answer there is not necessarily, but it's, again, something that's worth reviewing. So in terms of effectiveness of wills in other states, as long as that will was validly executed in another state, say, for example, Texas or Montana, where I'm from, and you then move to Colorado, if it was effective and legally valid when you signed it in Montana or Texas, it's going to be effective and legally valid in Colorado. There are some other nuances. Like California, for example, it's a community property state, and community property rules basically dictate who owns what in a marital relationship. So that means that some of the property that Coloradans automatically think of as each other's when you're referring to your spouse or your significant other may not necessarily be the case if you're coming from a place like California, which has those community property rules. But again, it all comes down to just having a conversation with myself. And again, that's where I like to be a resource for people to come in and talk, because I'm not going to sell you on anything you don't need. So, come in, have a conversation, and if things need to be changed, we'll change it. If not, we won't. And just whatever fits right for you.
Awesome. Well, Evan, thank you for joining me today. If folks want to get in contact, what do they need to do?
Yeah, so you can Google Steiner and Zendejas or Steiner, Zendejas, Burrell, and Wilhelmy. We've got a mouthful of names just like any other law firm out there. You can Google us and find our contact info there, or you can give us a call at 719-635-4200. And then our website is www.coloradolawgroup.com, and that's just all spelled out, all one word. And if you ask for Evan, happy to help, or you can talk to any of the other attorneys we've got in the office.
Well, Evan, thanks again for joining me today. I hope those of you out there listening have found a bit of information that you're able to use in making those decisions when it comes time to really look at the legacy. As always, if you've got questions about what we've talked about, give me a call, 719-500-8700. Go to the website, frsfinancialgroup.com. Click on that contact tab. Whatever the case may be, feel free to reach out, because we would love to hear from you. Remember, we are here talking about your money, because your money matters. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.